everyone. Welcome to Rewatchable, episode 129, carrying on with our rewatch of The Legend of Korra. We're up to book 3, episodes 10, Long Live the Queen, and 11, Ultimatum. I'm your host this week, Natalie, and I'll introduce the rest of this week's crew in a second. If you want to get in touch with us to talk about the episode or leave some feedback to read out on a future episode or tell us how right or wrong that you think we are, you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com, tweet us at re_watchable. You can join us on Tumblr, which is rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com for all your giftastic needs, or you can comment on this post on hyperbull.com, the parent host website, etc. of our fine podcast. So that is how you can get in touch with us if you should feel the need. And this week we have a slightly depleted crew because everyone else is off having fun in the real world or something. But I am hosting Natalie. I am your super fan, and we also have Caitlin, who's a super fan, and Brittany, who is the newbie this week. So a little bit of a fun fact for all of you so that you get used to our voices. Mine is always going to stand out, unfortunately, but my fun fact is that this upcoming weekend I am going to my first ever quote-unquote destination wedding at a vineyard where, like, the bride and groom are making basically everyone who needs to go to it travel quite a distance to get there. Like, half of the family is from Canada, so we'll be flying over from Canada, and the rest of us, it's in a different state where we are, where we have to, like, take a plane to get there. So that should be interesting, but they're very nice people, so hopefully it'll be good. Caitlin, do you want to go next?
Oh, I always forget that we do these.
We don't have to keep doing them. I just thought that people get confused by the voices sometimes, so that it's good to introduce yourself.
I'll say that my fun fact is that I'm not going to a destination wedding or anything fun over the next weekend because I have a teaching job, so I'll be grading.
What's the assignment that you have currently that you need to grade?
They have various homework assignments. So they're writing paragraphs because I'm teaching a remedial English class. So they write paragraphs about various topics.
Cool. What's your favorite topic to make them to teach about, or to, or like text to make them kind of interpret or learn or things like that?
Oh, it all comes right out of the textbook. So they're not particularly great.
Oh, well, never mind. Okay. Brittany, how about you?
Hi, I'm Brittany, and I'm not screaming, even though the Patriots just scored a touchdown.
You can scream periodically throughout the episode if you want to.
So, my fun fact is that we are recording this episode at 6:14 Eastern Standard Time on a Sunday when the New England Patriots are playing the Dallas Cowboys, and we are winning.
Sorry.
And the Falcons won.
And the Falcons won. Good for me, too, for my fantasy team. So,
is that a football team as well?
Yeah.
Where's that one from?
Atlanta. They're my hometown team.
Oh, okay. Are they the same?
Even more fun fact, Patriots are not my hometown team. I am from New Jersey, and the Patriots are from New England. That's okay.
Good. Football. I understand. Let's move on. Okay, so we're going to go straight into Chapter 10, Long Live the Queen. And talk about that, and then we'll talk about the next episode, and all should be well. So, in this episode, Korra gets everyone stuck in the desert, and then Asami gets everyone out. Later, they meet Zuko and his dragon IRL, and are not as excited as they should be. Meanwhile, in Ba Sing Se, the Red Lotus kills the queen or something, open parentheses, it was really unclear, close parentheses, and Marco and Bolin are stuck in a cell during the purge. Oh, God. So a brief but accurate summary from Ariana this week about this episode where, yeah, they really do kill the queen. They make a big effort to not say killed her. They, like, took her down, but she dead. They killed her. It's in, which is...
Yeah, and they were like, because they even say, like, they keep pushing it and pushing it and pushing it, and then they're finally like, met a violent end.
Yeah,
and I'm like, oh,
it's pretty,
okay.
Pretty intense. So, yeah, one of the first aspects of this episode is Bolin and Marco getting transported to Ba Sing Se, where they make the deal with the Earth Queen. But Bolin making friends with the Red Lotus, how does this strategy work for you as a, you know, as a survival tactic, I guess, when kidnapped? Like, you know, is it good to get them on your side, or do you want to hold your moral ground and fight every step of the way? I love his interactions with them, but yeah, how do you feel about it? Is he being stupid or smart here?
He's being Bolin.
Yeah, he's being Bolin. I don't know if he's actually thinking it through. It's sort of just like, well, I'm going to be stuck here. Let's find out what they did when they were stuck here, and maybe I can have a good time too.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he was thinking about it as a tactic, but I really liked it as sort of a humanizing moment because, you know, hearing about their time in prison, like, you know, it must have sucked no matter who you were, really, the, you know, 13 years in prison, and they kind of... It kind of does humanize those characters a little bit in a way that I really enjoyed. And another person who's really enjoyable now is Derek Hale Marco, which is a little bit lost on you guys, but never mind. He and his sort of grumpy, sulky demeanor without his trademark arrogance of the past couple of seasons is... very charming and adorable and fuzzy and huggable and great. So I love Marco again now, so that's good. Brittany, are you sort of more impressed by him now, or how do you feel about him in season 3? I mean, we're near the end, but he's had a bit of a change over this arc.
I'm like meh, you know. He doesn't get me excited. I'm still waiting for General Iroh to come back now. I've, like, sort of written Mako off, and now I'm just, like, waiting for that, like, that ship in the distance, you know? But, I mean, Mako's fine. He doesn't annoy me, which is good. As long as he doesn't annoy me, everyone's good. But Bolin is stepping up his game. I think he had me, like, laughing out loud these last two episodes. So I really have appreciated his character a lot more after the Movers. Like, I loved him during the Movers. I know you weren't a huge fan of them, but he's so funny.
Yeah, I love him, but I love Marco as the kind of grumpy straight man that has to go along with them and complains about things in a not too annoying manner. Caitlin, how about you about Marco at this point?
I mean, we've talked about this before, but I find him so endearing right now because he's kind of just found his niche. Like, he has a job that he's actually good at, and he's kind of found the dynamic where he fits. And he's just super awkward most of the time. And it's just so enjoyable to see him not being all superior and... He's just so much better now, and I love him now.
Yeah, I definitely like having him around, as opposed to there's sort of a period in season 2 where it's like if the boys weren't part of the team, it wouldn't have really mattered, but it now would matter a lot if he wasn't, I think. So the Earth Queen interacts basically with the Red Lotus once they get there, and, you know, they strike this deal that they'll, you know... The Red Lotus wants to take the Avatar away so that Earth Queen doesn't have, like, the trouble and international treason of keeping her in custody, and then she'll get to find out where the Airbenders were. Ariana has noted that she doesn't appreciate how the Earth Queen resembles Frida Kahlo, presumably because she likes Frida Kahlo and doesn't like the Earth Queen. The Earth Queen in general is a pretty nasty person, you know, as we've previously discussed. You know, she ate her father's bear. And
the poor bear.
Yeah,
I know, that was like the most tragic thing to like realize after watching these episodes.
I loved the throwback to the bear, but not the fact that he got eaten. How does the nice Earth King that we met, how does he raise a daughter like this? Like, how does that happen?
Maybe the bear raised her. But I feel like she would even be calmer if the bear raised her.
I don't know, it's just weird.
Yeah, she's a little, like, it's sort of like what we're seeing with a bunch of the characters. Like, they're not really like their parents too much. Mm-hmm. So she's kind of like this polar opposite of what we'd expect to see come out of the Earth King.
Mm. And it's, you know, it's probably been discussed when we first met the Earth Queen as well, but I haven't been on an episode that's talked about her much yet. And it's just really crazy to see, you know, after everything that happened with Ba Sing Se in The Last Airbender and how it was, like, freed and all of that nonsense and stuff like that, that it's just sort of reverted right back to how it was with the class system, and, you know, there are no airbenders in Ba Sing Se and stuff like that. And so, I don't know, I think that that's an interesting commentary on how much change actually really happens in the world. But obviously, by the end of this episode, there is the most major change that's disrupted Ba Sing Se before. So, yeah, what Zaheer is saying to the Earth Queen, and Zaheer and the Red Lotus in general, have a really interesting... they're really interesting villains, I guess. Really interesting bad guys, because they are... They're not really doing it for selfish gains. And their points about revolution and their points about, I guess, freedom and that kind of thing, you know, are the kind of things that really spurred real-life revolutions and the kind of things that, you know... that people believe in. And so, you know, I don't know how much that those kind of revolutions happen in the world today, in the same way that they used to in sort of earlier times, like where this is set, but it's certainly not an unrealistic situation. So I guess, are you guys on the side of the Red Lotus in any possible way here? Brittany, how are you kind of feeling about watching these sort of unusual villains, especially after your immersion in revolution culture in recent weeks?
Well, it was interesting, because I think, like, when I was listening to Zaheer start to talk, I was like, oh, here we go. Like, I kind of, like, almost wanted to just tune him out because I knew that it was going to be bad. But then he started, like, explaining things, and I was like, oh, wait a minute. Like, it took me back to season one where we were like, oh, wait, this, like, they do have a point with the benders versus non-benders. Like, The way they're executing it doesn't make perfect sense, but there's a point there. Like, there is some truth to what Zaheer is saying, and I am almost like, well, maybe they should work out some kind of compromise here, because they have a good point. Korra doesn't have a good point, but she stands for good, so maybe, like, we should, like, find some sort of balance between them. Yeah, I thought it was really... It took it to a whole new level, I think, because I wasn't expecting him to, like, have, a, like, something that would make me pause, you know? Mm.
Caitlin, how about you with this situation? Because Zaheer kind of goes a bit further than, like, just a, revolution. What he genuinely believes in for mankind is anarchy, is, like, a state of, like, the natural order of kill or be killed. It's not like, oh, the people should lead themselves. It's sort of what he ends up instilling is in Ba Sing Se is textbook anarchy. So that's not an ideal situation, but do you think the world of Avatar should have kind of monarchies and stuff like that, or should it be more of a democracy? Is there any way that he is right, or could have something that works, I suppose?
I mean, just from the brief instance of his rule or whatever coming to fruition in Ba Sing Se shows that probably not. Like, chaos is generally not the greatest way to keep things going, because they're all going to end up destroyed. But, you know, the show has shown us both democracy in Republic City, because we've got the president, and then you've got the monarchies in the other areas of the world. So we're seeing both of them, and they both systems are showing their advantages and disadvantages distinctly. And I don't know if we can say that one is necessarily better than the other. It seems to depend on the ruler, because the Earth Queen is awful, but if you had a better ruler in her place, it might not be so bad. And we had plenty of issues with the president in season two and him kicking Korra out of the city and everything. So I don't know. I don't know that we're seeing anyone being significantly better than the other, but I don't think Zaheer is the best one to be listening to on this.
No, that's true. One of the things that I've always found really interesting about Zaheer as well is, as I've mentioned a couple of times before, The actor who plays him, Henry Rollins, was like a very famous punk musician who, in the early stages of their band and the whole punk scene, very much stood for what Zaheer stands for in real life. Like, the whole, like, anarchy and social order, and that, you know, everything, you know, anything, any centralized government is bad for people. And anyway, so it's interesting that he ended up taking on a role like this, possibly in some amount of irony, because I don't think he's quite so fierce in his mellowed out older age, but it's always really amused me about this character. And we now have the question mark here of Ding Dong, the Earth Queen is dead, question mark. And yes, no question mark. She definitely is. I think it's one of the most graphic, quote-unquote, deaths on the show. We kind of right up until the moment, I guess, that you could confirm, oh, she's dead, by Zaheer sucking the breath out of her body.
It's really horrific.
It's not very nice. Not a good way to go. So yeah, that was fun. How does this compare to other Avatar deaths? I guess, Brittany, as a newbie, were you kind of surprised to see this much death, or did you think we were sort of still covering it up, or would have you liked this to be clearer?
Oh no, it was pretty clear by the by the end. When it first happened, I was like, maybe he just rendered her like unconscious, but then I was like, but no air went back into her body. And he kind of just left, and then, you know, you have Grandma Bolin, I don't know what her name is, but Grandma,
yeah.
Like, you know, bringing the portrait and being like, rest in peace, basically, and I'm like, oh my gosh, like,
this,
it was like, really, like, she was suffocating, like, it was horrible. I could not believe that they were actually showing that. Because, like, we've joked on here about, like, you know, taking just, like, air or water out of people and, like, you know, killing them, basically. But watching it, I was like, no, we're supposed to joke about this. You're not supposed to go there. Like, it was weird to see all of that. And it just didn't stop. Like, the violence is, like, really picking up, which it isn't bothering me, but I'm just... I have to remind myself that I'm watching a Nickelodeon show.
Yeah, it is. It definitely, yeah, there are definitely going to be some more pretty violent bits that are like, oh my god, that just happened. Someone think of the children. So, of course, when people en masse are, to quote Tommy Lee Jones in Men in Black, you know, a person is smart, people are stupid. And the people en masse are quite stupid and instantly go, you know, once they learn that they're freed, they, you know, instantly go to the rioting stage, which does happen in many places. Like, the mob mentality doesn't happen in many situations, many revolutions. This has happened over and over again. So Ba Sing Se is no different. You know, people are looting and setting stuff on fire, including the places where they live themselves. So that seems helpful and like it's going to present a new great style of life for them moving forward, but that's what happens. Why do you think this is what happens with people when a revolution happens? I have never studied, like, you know, anthropology or human behavior, but I don't know if any of you have any clues as to why this is often the crowd reaction.
I think it's partially because they just don't know what they want and they feel like they can have anything at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
So the mentality is just to, like, take what I can. Like, oh, I've never been in this place before. I'm going to go in this place. Like, oh, I've never, like, had this. Like, the guy came out with, like, the pottery on his head. It's like, I've never been able to afford any of this stuff in my home. Like, yeah. I'm just going to take it. And then the consequences later are, well, it's worth nothing. And now I'm just stuck with this pottery.
And my house is on fire.
Yeah, my house is on fire. But, like,
well, also, and they've just been so repressed in this way of life. So it's like, with that gone, they can have a massive response the other way. But because of the repression, they overcompensate when they have the chance. So I think it's a lot of reaction to that repression.
Mm. Yeah. And if this is the, if anyone listening is a... If anyone currently listening, including Ariana, if she listens back, is a current Hamilton fiend, this is the reason why George Washington didn't help the French, FYI.
Oh, I thought it was because, like, Hamilton was just really good in a rap battle and, like, totally handed Jefferson his, you know, comeuppance.
Anyway, so back to the girls. They sort of fly across the desert. They're getting taken. You know, the whole plot of what happened in Ba Sing Se is hinged on that they had, you know, Asami and Cora in captivity, who were coming to them in the airship with the, you know, the Ba Sing Se army to do the trade with Zaheer. And they never get there because the airship crashes. Asami manages to science the shit out of the situation by, you know, very coyly getting herself, you know, placed physically chained in a position that she's able to get out of, and then frees herself and Cora, and then Cora stupidly breaks the airship by crashing it. So Asami's really good at stuff, Cora's really bad at stuff. What else is new? So I kind of love this plot because I love how the like the crew on the ship kind of change hands and end up working with the girls, and by the end up being like, not my problem what the Earth Queen wants with you. You guys are cool. Off you go. Have a good life. So I love this entire plot. But how did you guys feel about the specifics of Asami's behavior and Cora's behavior during the airship debacle? Caitlin, how about you?
I love it. I love seeing... Like, this was kind of my favorite scene. So, like, all of this stuff put together. But essentially, like, they are the poster girls of bitches get stuff done. Like, they're captive, and Asami convinces the guy to put her where she knows it's not gonna hold. And then she just breaks herself free, and she concocts this entire plot to get themselves free. And she fixes the ship, and then she builds the glider, and... She's just a boss. I love her. And then Cora's snarkiness is always amazing. And I just love seeing them work together. I think you can kind of almost see it, like, Cora's really good at destroying things and Asami's really good at fixing them. So they kind of balance each other.
Yeah. Yeah, Asami's definitely a bit more of a thinker. But yeah, I do like them, and one of the complaints that people had about season two is Asami didn't really do a lot. Like, she didn't really show a lot. She just sort of was off in the background doing her business. And I really like in season three, you know, that she's given the opportunity to show her powers. You know, obviously they're not bending powers, but her powers of operating in the world. I always love how much she's proud of her mechanics that she is, like, when she's like, you know, this inferior cabbage corp and stuff. So that's really great for me. But yeah, Brittany, how did you what did you think of kind of the end result of the airship crash situation?
Asami has a lot of patience because I would have murdered Cora with a stray piece of metal, like, in the middle of the desert. I don't get it. Like, how these people have the patience to deal with this avatar. She just annoys me to no end. She's like, and then she's just like, whoops, sorry.
Oh, I broke it.
Oops. Yeah. And Asami's just like, all right, fine. I got it. I got it under control, which is great. She's fantastic. I love Asami. I think she's doing great things. But, like, I would be more forgiving of Bolin if he, like, you know, messed something up at this point. Cora, I'm just like, well, wait till we get to the next episode because I got a lot to talk about. Oh, no, this happened. No, I don't. I can talk about it now because it happened in the last episode, but I wasn't on last week.
Okay, talk.
When she meets Zaheer in the spirit world and he finds out about the Unala, like, she finds out about all the things with her uncle again. She's like, oh, he betrayed me, and he betrayed... I'm like, again, I can't do the uncle again. You gotta let him go. Like, he... You cannot be disappointed in him again, Cora. You cannot. I was so frustrated with her in that moment. I was like, no. There's no more feeling sorry for Unala. Like, where is the line? Where is the line?
Sorry. Killing me.
Oh, yeah. All right. I'm over it. Cora's okay-ish.
Maybe we should learn to be more tolerant of Cora. I mean, she's the avatar we've got right now. She might not be the avatar we deserve, but, you know.
Poor Cora. You guys are so mean to her. I love her.
I had problems with Aang, too. Don't get me wrong. But Cora is just hit after hit after hit. Like, the redeeming stuff isn't enough to cancel out all the hits so far.
I don't know. I do like her in general, but she does keep... She is a bit hot-headed, and it does lead to, like, major problems. Like, it's not just, like, oops, it's, like, major... I'm like, at this point, has she done... It is a harsh thing to say, but in general, in the world, as the Avatar, has she done more good than harm at this
point? But she doesn't, like, I feel like right now, like, completely dead serious, I still feel like she does not know what the purpose of the Avatar is. Like, and she's still learning it, which is fine, but she literally, like, doesn't have a basic outline anymore. Like, and they kind of, like, joke about it, like, you know, like, oh, I, like, you know, let, I guess that's my fault, too. Like, you know, they say that line in this episode, but, like, you know, it is your fault. Like, you're not listening to the guidance of people around you, and it's getting old. Like, if there's so many times you can forgive her in the beginning, because, yeah, she's new, she's learning how to be the Avatar, but, like, you're in some serious, like, this is, like, your third crisis. Like, the first two taught her nothing, I feel like. I'm just getting more and more.
Yeah.
I love the secondary characters of this show are really saving it, and they're doing, like, above and beyond, because I love them so much. But Korra, ooh, girl, I have some problems with you.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting, because, you know, at this point, yeah, she's been the cause of a lot of problems. She's then managed to solve them, most of them. But it's kind of like they wouldn't have happened if she hadn't made the mistakes either. But I don't know if we can blame it for everything. So that's an interesting thing for people to weigh in on if they want to. Unless Caitlin would like to fight a defense now, because I can't quite weigh it up in my head.
What's her fault? Like, it wasn't her fault that Amon rose because he was going to rise anyway. It wasn't her fault that Zaheer and that group broke from prison. That was going to happen one way or the other. She was more responsible for the, like, Unalaq stuff, but he was purposely misleading her, and yeah, she's a teenage girl who trusts her, so where's, like...
But she went and trusted him again against listening to people who are looking out for her, and the second time she trusted him, the spirit portals opened, which then snowballed into this whole Zaheer breaking out thing. Because, like, clearly, as we learned, like, they were in cahoots with Unalaq. Yeah, it kind of blew up in their faces, but, like, that whole harmonic convergence thing, like, if that was put to an end, I have a feeling that they would have not broken out right now.
And then there would have been a different problem that would not have been her fault.
Like... No, it probably would have been. She probably would have crashed an airship.
Oh, my God.
Before.
All right.
Oh, my God.
Okay, guys, okay, we're going to not fight about that, but I would like, if anyone has any feedback to say whether they think Korra's done more good than harm or harm than good, you could prepare an itemized list if you'd like, you know. I feel like, you know, that might work, but we won't proper fight about it now. At the end of the day, I don't know, she's doing okay. We've got some airbenders, you know, and stuff like that. But I more think, like, little problems. Like, she gets into scenarios where, you know, like crashing the airship so much that it's broken, you know. She sort of makes little problems harder that other people then have to fix. But there are human beings who are like that, and I'm probably one of them, so never mind. Okay, so... They fix the boat. One of the greatest bits is they actually fix the airship to working condition, and then this giant sand fish jumps up and, like, eats it. And I love the look on all of their faces when that happens. And then they're just like, oh, guess we'll start again and build the sand bender, the sand sailor out in the desert, and that works for them. So that was good. But yeah, what the hell was that fish?
That was just ridiculous. I was like that guy who just sat in the sand, like, well, I give up. I'm done. Like,
yeah.
Like, I was like, what? They did such good work. I'm like, can they not succeed anywhere?
Yeah.
And then it's just like, life is just going to keep kicking you down. And then all of those men were just so annoying. They're like, help is coming. Just sit still. I'm like, no, let Asami do her thing. So annoying.
It's okay. The captain then leveled up at the end. It was all good. But then, yeah, they manage to bend back to the oasis, which is fun, and they see Zuko's dragon outside, and which is exciting for everyone, because Zuko's dragon's here, and... What?
Nothing, it's just, I don't know what, I laughed when I saw Zuko's dragon, because I was just like, aw, look, he parked it right out front, so they knew it was here.
I wonder how long long he had the dragon and if it got to be friends with Appa.
Oh, no, that hurts my heart. Because then now I have to think that Appa's dead. Oh, it's also sad. Everyone's dead.
Yeah. It's true. Momo's except Zuko. Dead. Zuko's not dead.
Except Zuko. Zuko's not dead. That's a beacon of light.
And then they go in, and Sami's there, and then Zuko, Lin, and Korra's dad are all there together at the table, and Korra's not as excited as she should be to meet Zuko, just saying. So, yeah.
Yeah, what was that about? Mike, you're meeting the Fire Lord, ex-retired Fire Lord, but still...
She was very respectful.
She was respectful, but, like, I mean, next episode it would be how I meet Zuko.
I don't know. Maybe she feels their spiritual bond, like, already. You know, like, maybe she feels it.
And... maybe because she hung out with Iroh so many times.
Yeah. And it's like, huh? I can't believe Zuko's only seen her once since she was a small child. Like, maybe it hurts him too much or something. Anyway... So, there's much more Zuko in the next episode, so let's move on to that after we do our quotes and scenes. First of all, my favourite scene was a bit of a weird one, and it's Zaheer in the radio room after they kill the Earth Queen, and the way that he handles the guard there, and, what's the water lady's name, Caitlin?
The mean one.
Yeah, it's Minghua. Minghua. I was like, it's Wa. So I was like, I couldn't remember which order the soldiers came in. Water. Yeah, Minghua. Minghua threatens him, and you know, and he's like, chill. And it basically just really hammered home for me, like, how much Zaheer believes in what he's doing and how much, like, he believes in people and wants what he considers to be, like, good things for people. That he's not, like, a ruthless killer of all people. He's just, like, a ruthless killer of, like, the people he considers to be evil, which is, like, centralized government. And I think it's just a moment that really hammers home, like, what the Red Lotus are meant to be doing. Not that it's a particularly... good thing at the end of the day, but that it is like a humanist thing that they believe in, which makes it kind of scarier than just, oh, he's evil, we can take him down. So
yeah, and I think that you bring up a good point. Actually, it just made me think of something. Mm-hmm. Like when he was on the radio, all of these people were like, we weren't fighting for this. Like, because they're all kind of just sit there and take the news what? At first. They're like, yeah. This wasn't, like, a possibility that ever crossed our minds. So now that they're being told, like, you were oppressed, like, you, like, they kind of knew, but they weren't thinking about it. They were like, well, this is our situation. There's no one here to lead us. And now all of a sudden they're in this, like, new position of, like, oh, my God, like, this is what could be possible. It's just, it's really interesting.
Yeah, it's exactly what happens with revolutions, with real revolutions. Yeah. So yeah, I really kind of liked that as a demonstration of that. But yeah, do you want to go on with your favorite scenes?
Yeah. So my favorite scene was Bolin just in the prison, and actually their prison neighbor with the mirror when he was trying to talk to them. I thought that was hilarious. But just Bolin, like, you know, he accepts that he, like, can't, sorry, the Patriots just scored a touchdown. Bolin, like, accepts that he cannot metal bend, but, like, just, like, Mako pushing him to do it, and then Bolin just, like, almost, I think, humoring him. Like, I feel like he's not really even trying at this point, but just being, like, at the bars. Like, I thought it was really funny, and just so Bolin. Like, I love Bolin so much.
Bolin.
Can I say one bit about that? Mako is an idiot, can I just say? He's a freaking idiot who knows nothing about engineering. Because he had, in the bit where Bolin has given up trying to metal bend and Mako is, like, welding through the door with fire, he's just welding a random bar. If he did the same amount of energy, he'd gotten through one bar. But was he just trying to slice all the bars of his cage? Because if he'd put that much Fire Nation energy into welding the hinges on the door, he could have pushed the door out. But he wasn't. He's welding a bar that wasn't even connected to the hinges. And I'm like, you're wasting your time. You really have done the wrong thing here. So you're stupid. But that's okay. I love you because you're pretty. Anyway, that was just a weird, stupid thing that I noticed because I grew up around a lot of welding. So, yeah. Anyway, carry on. Caitlin, sorry.
So I already kind of said mine, but it was in the desert and Korra and Asami being super productive and pretty much saving everyone's life. So girl power.
What was your favorite aspect, like favorite little moment of their takeover or their fixing the situation?
I like when the guards start like answering to them and like saluting Asami. Like she starts giving orders and they're like, okay.
Yeah, that was cool, because they're, like, idiots, that whole group.
I like Korra's Hannibal mask. So, favorite quotes. Mine was actually from that prison scene as well, where Marco is giving Bolin a pep talk, and he's just like, I believe in you, and neighbor guy is like, I believe in you too, Bolin, because he's so desperate, and I just found it hysterical, but yeah. I would be really downheartened if I was Bolin and I knew in my bones that I couldn't do what they wanted me to do, but that they thought that I was their only hope. And yeah, I would be really depressed by all of this if I was Bolin, but I still found this funny. Okay, Brittany, how about you?
Okay, this isn't a dig at Korra. I genuinely thought that this line was funny. When one of the other, like, crewmen, Kong, apparently his name is, when I copied it from the transcript, said, I heard that since all the spirits came back, this desert has been haunted by them. And Korra's like, oh, right, so I guess that's my fault, too. I'm like, well, kind of, but yes. But I thought it was funny, like, you know, it wasn't mean. Well, but it was funny. I liked it.
And the giant monster fish did not end up being her fault.
No, it did not. It did not.
Is that just one of those weird things, like something Aang would have probably crossed the world to go riding on or something? Like, just one of those weird beasts?
Yeah, probably.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm sure Tenzin would have been like, oh, yeah, this one time Dad and I, oh, sorry, boomy.
all right, Caitlin, you've actually got the quote that I desperately wanted, but carry on.
So mine was the conversation when Bolin is bonding with the Red Lotus when they're captured, so he's like trying to tell the story of the group, and he's like, you were raised by an older sister, your mustache grew in when you were 10, and I'm sensing an unspoken attraction between you two. And Kazan kind of looks over at Ming-Wong and is like, 2 out of 3, not bad.
I love it so much. It was so good. I really love that scene, because even when Ming-Wa was talking about making up the stories, like who had trouble with their girlfriend who was secretly wanted to be a pastry chef, I was kind of comparing that mentally to like Hama back in the day when she was in prison in the Fire Nation, who, for anyone who is not particularly remember, was the evil waterbending, bloodbending lady that Katara met. And how, you know, her entire time in prison was like concentrating on killing, and that, you know, she was actually probably, you know, intrinsically one of the nastiest people in the show, or just most reeked with revenge. But I loved that, you know, Ming-Wa was just sitting there thinking about who was a pastry chef. And I don't know, I just really like these Red Lotus people. I think that they're quite real, like that they're not as villainy as some of the villains, and I enjoy that a lot.
Yeah, I really like them.
Yeah,
I think they're a really interesting group.
Yeah. All right, so Ultimatum, chapter 11. In this episode, there's a lot of sad Mexicans, but fortunately Marco and Bolin rescue/kidnap their abuelita before bailing on Ba Sing Se. The brothers find Korra and are appropriately excited to meet Zuko, but bad news bears because the Red Lotus is using the destruction of the Air Nation as leverage. Whoops. The gang kids try and hold them off after Tenzin once again volunteers his siblings to get rich or die trying, but even their trifecta of badassery is no match for the Red's self-disciplined style of Krayt. So
you did a good job that time.
Yeah.
That's good.
That's good. Why does she think that they're Mexican cousins? Is it just because there's a lot of them? Like, is that, like...
I don't know. I think it's because they remind her of her family a lot.
Yeah, that's just what I'm saying. Like, that she has
her grandma taking, like, the picture of the Pope, you know, like, stuff like that.
Okay, yeah, so, That's one of the first things that happens in the episode, is that Marco and Bolin take the airship once they get out of prison. They commandeer the airship, go trace back the route to the Misty Palms Oasis to find Cora, but before that, they, you know, they go and rescue their newly found family, and everyone's, like, ready to go except Grandma, who wants to die in the house that she was born in or whatever, and you know, refuses to leave. Grandma might be going a little bit senile because she says a few things that don't make too much sense, but I love her.
That is Grandma. Those are... That's, like, kind of close to mine, too, a little bit. Like, she's going to go down with the ship.
Oh, I do love the grandma. I don't know, Marco and Boleyn having this big family, like, what are they going to do with them now? Like, are they just going to hang around with them forever? Or, you know, what would you do with a newfound gigantic family?
I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of glad that they feel some sort of kinship to them because they're not just like, I was thinking about that when the episode opened and they're like, we have to get to them and like, we have to like cross this like giant desert to get to Korra. And I was like, but this town is literally burning and you know that you have this family here. So I was glad that they wrote that back in for them to go and get them because they don't like, they have this surrogate family at this point, but I'm glad that they're taking a chance to like save the people who they think might not make it to make that chance for them in the future. So I like it. I think it was a good call for them to go and get them and they could figure it out when the world is saved before the next crisis of book four.
Wow. Okay. I really loved that regardless. Like, and we got Grandma back and, you know, Grandma got to meet Cora and Asami, which was a great moment. And Ariana would like to say that you are very muscular for a woman is the most Latina old lady thing that anyone has ever said. And I loved the grandma meeting Cora and Asami and confronting Marco about dating them. That was fantastic. I also loved the moment where she was like, why is Boleyn hugging that big rat? Now he's kissing it with Pabu. Because that was just another fantastic moment. Everyone's coming back together in the oasis, which is fantastic.
It's an oasis of friendship.
Oh, let's just live here forever. Do you guys want to talk about, I think we've all put it in our favorite moments, but did you guys want to talk en masse about the others meeting Zuko for the first time?
Well, first I want to talk about how hilarious it was when Boleyn tried to take the airship out and he was just like, nope, there's no up button. Nope, there's no up button. And people are just like, ah, as the airship's like dragging across the ground. I thought that was hilarious. But literally Boleyn meeting Zuko would be me meeting Zuko, like just squealing and like having a hard time breathing and whispering to people around me very loudly, can you believe it's Lord Zuko? I loved it. Nat, I don't know if you remember, but this was the scene that I was trying to talk to you about.
Yeah, no, I remember because
I thought it happened so much earlier because I saw a gif of it on Tumblr.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, this scene has to happen soon. I'm so obsessed with this. Like, when is it coming? When is it coming? When is it coming? Then it finally happened.
Well, yeah, because I think that you said that it was tagged for a different episode.
It was tagged for like 306. So I was waiting for it for so long. It never happened.
Sorry. Here it is.
It was worth the wait.
And then, yeah, of course it is. And then everyone gets back together, like Marco and Cora, you know, they hug and then they're like, oh, we shouldn't have hugged. And then they're like, no, it's okay, we're friends. And so they're cute and nice together and that's all good. Is there any hope for them as more than friends at this point? Ariana seems to think maybe she might start to ship them. I don't. I just think it's cute that they're over their stupidness. So, yeah. Who else comes back? They're all there. Lynn's there. Tonrak's there. Everyone's there. They're all in this together, etc. So, everyone's there. And then, right before, basically the opposite plot to this is we also find out what's going on with Zaheer and the Airbenders, which we'll carry on talking about in a moment. But the result of that, Cora kind of trying to figure out how she needs to handle the situation, like them, you know, getting in touch with the Airbenders and then making the decision to meditate into the spirit world to try and confront Zaheer. That doesn't work, but she doesn't meet him there, but she does meet Iroh there, and, you know, she talks about to him about not having any past avatars for advice, and he says, you know, to go and talk to Zuko because Zuko and Aang were BFFs, and I cried, and you know, et cetera, et cetera. And
I just love how Ira was like, you know, I was just out looking for some new teapots. Because, like, you just, like, what, you just stumble upon them in the spirit world?
Well, it is the spirit world.
I guess so.
Maybe he's
I also love that Ira is, like, Korra's now equivalent of all her past lives. Like, yeah. Ira is that valuable.
Yeah, it's true. Maybe he's looking for the teapot that, you know, Wan carried around his spirit lady girlfriend in for 45 years or whatever. Anyway, Iroh's there. He's great. Now, Ariana and I might have to have a feud here, but because, yeah, she's put... Also, Zuko is totally the Angelica Schuyler of that relationship. No. May you always be fucking satisfied. And then she said, shoots a whiskey. So is she referring to involving with Katara and...
Okay, I actually had to think about this for a while.
Because I'm like, hang on, how does this work? Because Ori...
Okay, so she's saying that Zuko is watching... I mean, yeah, Zuko's watching, like... Wait, who's Zuko watching? Yeah, like, who's Eliza in the relationship?
Because I'm saying Aang is Eliza, but I think she means Katara is Eliza.
For everyone listening who has not listened to the Hamilton soundtrack, probably should have listened to it by now or known anything about Hamilton.
I think she thinks Katara is Eliza and that Aang is Hamilton, but I think... No, I think she thinks that Aang is Eliza and Katara is Hamilton, but I think Aang is Hamilton. If Zuko
and I don't get this reference.
Sorry. Caitlin's like, what the hell? It's a very important historical
No, Katara would have to be Hamilton, because...
Katara would have to be Hamilton. However, I disagree.
Huh.
yes, I think that she means Katara is Hamilton, but in my world, Aang is Hamilton. Because I care much more about Zuko crying over Aang than I do about Zuko crying over Katara.
Okay. Then I'm definitely on Ariana's side.
I know you are. It's fine.
Aang could definitely be burning his letters from Zuko in a fire bin.
Oh, my God.
Crying over the end of their relationship.
Oh, my God. Anyway, very important historical threesome. Listen to Hamilton, etc. More tear bending as Zuko hears that Korra talked to Iroh. This was my favorite moment, like his face when he hears that. So yeah, that was like one of the biggest moments for me, that Zuko looked like Zuko, like that he looked and felt like his expression and reaction was like the teenage Zuko. Like, I just loved it so much. So.
Oh, that just made me think about how long Zuko's probably been without Iroh and how he reacted after Iroh died, and then I was very sad.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Can you imagine? But did Iroh actually die, or was he just like, peace out? Because, like, if Zuko meditates hard enough, he can go see him.
Yeah. Yes, Iroh... I don't think this is a spoiler exactly, but it's a fact. Yes, Iroh left the real world to go... He walked into the spirit world... kind of instead of dying, like when he finished business. It's kind of like how the elves go like into the west in Lord of the Rings. Like, it's kind of a metaphor for dying, but it's not actually dying.
Yeah, because like if that were the case, like Korra could just go into the spirit world and talk to Aang, know what I mean?
Rather
like, if
than dying
people who,
and going to Avatar heaven or whatever, you know, Avatar World, you know, rather than dying...
Avatar World.
I don't know. Which is
like go to Avatar World.
a final thing that, you know, the spirit either gets reincarnated or dispersed into the universe or whatever. Instead of that, Iroh's spirit is living forever with full consciousness in the spirit world because he chose...
But for Zuko, it would have been the equivalent of him dying because he's no longer in the...
Yeah.
Quote-unquote real world.
Yeah.
There's still some very painful loss involved.
Yes. Yeah.
But he
and that's what made me sad.
Yeah, it is still sad. All right, so his advice, he kind of doesn't really give... Zuko doesn't really give Korra a solid answer. He says, on one hand, Aang would have wanted the airbenders to succeed no matter what. But on the other hand, he would know that there's nothing more important than the Avatar for the whole world. So, and out of that, we kind of get the solution that Korra decides that she should turn herself in. I don't know if that's exactly what Zuko was saying. Like,
I think he wanted to pose both sides.
He offered both sides, like, yeah.
And be like, this is the advice I could give you, was this that the choice was ultimately up. Yeah, it's ultimately up to Aang, though.
Which option is better, do you think? Do you guys think?
Probably turning herself in, because I feel like the team is qualified enough and she is qualified enough to get herself out of it if she really applies herself.
Yeah, and it's just risking her life rather than
exactly
25 airbenders or whatever. I'm not sure which one would have worked best. But
this is another one of those situations where I feel like over the course of Aang's journeys, he made a lot more friends. So, like, I would feel more comfortable if Aang was in this situation. I know this
like,
isn't, like, yeah, this isn't putting
people
like,
coming to get him out.
Yeah, this isn't putting Korra down in any way, but just as a point of, like, compare and contrast, like, if Aang, like, because I feel like everywhere he went, he was adorable and he was little and everyone was like, oh, cute Avatar. But he has, like, a lot, whereas she has this, like, really, really, really strong core group of people. But at the same time, like, they're being captured in the Air Temple and, like, there's all sorts of things going on.
Yeah,
so she doesn't have...
Everyone knows... Yeah, like, everyone knows who Korra's friends are. Sorry to interrupt, but I'll just put this together. Like, everyone knows who to go after if they want to stop Korra. Whereas Aang, at least, might have had, like, a secret weapon friendship. Hey, remember those people on Kyoshi Island that you didn't know that I knew, but they totally love me? They've come to save me. Like, if you know
exactly.
what I mean. Like,
but here, I feel like if we did, like, now I'm rethinking my choice is my main point of this, is, like, does she give herself in because they already, like, know the targets to go after? And it's not like there's this, like, one place where she had visited where they could come and get her. Although maybe Zuko... going back to his daughter, like, the Fire Nation can come in, like, just, you know, totally own it and kill it, and that would be awesome because I love a good Fire Nation fight. But
sure.
I don't know. So now I'm not sure. I don't know. I'm like Korra. I don't know what to do.
Okay. So we're at the Air Temple with Tenzin now. And they
finally.
Yeah, sorry. You've been waiting. They get the message, you know, the Air Temple gets the message that Zaheer is coming, and it's, like, a fraction too late because they're already there, basically. And we have a fun little moment with Milo on the radio, but then Tenzin takes charge. And basically all of the Air Nation, all of the new airbenders are kind of at risk, and Tenzin's trying to evacuate them all. And he basically tries to get everyone out of the temple and then recruits Kaya and Bumi to help fight off the Red Lotus and Jinora to get everyone out, like, to the Bisons and stuff. So there's a very long fight scene at the end of this episode, like one of the longest continuous fight scenes, which, I don't know, first of all, do you guys like that, like the long extended fight scenes like this one? Caitlin, did this one drag for you, or did you enjoy it?
No, I thought it had a really good balance since it was going between three different pairs of people fighting. And so they were shifting between them enough that it keeps it interesting. And I think they have done enough that they've been building up to an epic fight, whereas if we'd been having a lot of smaller fights here and there, the longer one would feel kind of tedious, but because we haven't had much of that, it was like everything kind of coming together at once, so it felt very earned. And they just have this such incredible choreography when they do the fights, and I just think it's a treat to watch them do these massive bending fights.
Yeah, it is. It was a really big and diverse fight, especially with the unusual powers that the Red Lotus have. And Ariana has put some caps lock here. Brittany, would you like to read out this comment from Ariana in caps lock? I feel like you'll do it justice.
Yeah, all the time I want to read out her comments. So, coming from Ariana, she says, "Oh, look at those gang babies doing their mama proud. They busted out and Tenzin don't play no games."
Thank you.
No problem.
Thank you very much for that. So, basically, yeah, the siblings take on this big fight, and then there's a bit of discussion here about, like, why Tenzin always fights with them and how he manages things. So first of all, you know, he always sort of the comment here is that we find it very interesting how Tenzin divides up power or chooses people to lead versus flee versus fight. So he always automatically commands or assumes Kaya and Bumi will fight with him. Is it because they love each other and will protect each other? Is it because they understand each other's strengths and weaknesses? Is it because they're just playing the best fighters they've got? It's interesting how he does this, even though Bumi is still a novice airbender. It's also pretty fascinating that when all hell breaks loose, he puts his 11-year-old daughter in charge, not his wife, not his senior air acolyte. Why does he trust Jinora to make the right calls? So this entire situation is an interesting one, because I noticed that as well, like, you know, that Jinora is nearly always his number one backup for being in charge of the team that's not him. There's Team Tenzin, which he's in charge of, which is usually with certain people, and then the leader of Team Not Tenzin is nearly always Jinora, and I'm not sure if that's just because she's the most powerful airbender besides from him. And then, yeah, pulling Kaya and Bumi in. I mean, it could be because, you know, they're his family, so he doesn't, like, it's like, doesn't mind, you know, and Aang's family, so, like, no one else should die for this cause except for them. But I don't know, do you think they've had discussions off screen about how they're always up for what he's up for, or do you think it's kind of unfair or weird? Yeah, Caitlin, have you kind of ever thought about this dynamic before with him and Jinora and with him and the siblings?
Well, in terms of Jinora, it makes sense because Pema would be preoccupied with protecting the baby, so yeah. She's not going to be able to lead when she's focused on protecting an infant. And then Jinora is the most experienced of who is left, and she has proven that she's very good at what she does, and she's pretty much ready to get her airbending tattoos, so she's practically a master. So it makes sense that he would trust her after everything she's shown. And in terms of his siblings, I mean, Bumi is a career military man. Like, he was a general in the United Forces. He has been fighting for a huge part of his life. So, of course, he's going to enlist Bumi, even if he's just a novice airbender. He's still a very skilled military mind. Mm. And then he knows the training, I'm sure, that Kaya underwent. And I'm sure he knows that they would not want others to be hurt when they are probably the most capable fighters present.
Mm. Yeah, I feel like that's a pretty good balance. But yeah, Brittany, how about you? Do you feel anything in particular about what Ariana's pointed out about those fighting teams?
You know, I didn't really give it that much thought. It made perfect sense to me when I was watching it, mainly because, like Caitlin was saying, like, Bumi has all this experience. I would pick Bumi in a heartbeat over any bender who, like, has shown more progress in that class or whatever they're doing. Mm-hmm. I guess they're kind of like classes. And then Kaya, like, she's proven herself. Like, she's an amazing waterbender. We've seen her skills before. So, of course, you need a different element. You can't just have air up there. You need, like, to really, and she's the only other bender that they have. So that made total sense. And then as for Jinora, I feel like she is, like, strong-headed enough to know to not look back, you know, and take everyone and get them, like, follow her dad's wishes, whereas someone else, like, would have been, like, you know, oh, I need to look out for this person, oh, this person in particular. Like, sure, she's, like, kind of upset that Kai, like, gets hurt, but she keeps them going. Like, you know, she doesn't stop. She's like, and I think Tenzin has realized that from a young age in her.
Yeah. It does make me wonder a bit, like, do you respect our daughter more than you respect me with Pema? But, you know,
I think Pema gets it. Pema wants to get all of her kids out. Yeah. Like, I mean, she knows that Tenzin is going to fight and literally until he has no air left in him, which was, like, so admirable. He's so awesome. But yeah, I think she's not going to be able to do anything with that baby in her arms, and he knows that. And she's going to be looking just for Milo and Jinora, and, like, you know, like, she has a lot more focus on, like, three or four individuals as opposed to, like, getting everyone out.
Yeah, that's true. No, I think it's a good, I think it's a good point, but yeah, I'd be interested to see, you know, what those conversations had been like, maybe between Kaya and Bumi. But yeah, of course, you know, they're kind of like, if you, even if they hadn't discussed it, if you automatically call on, you know, your family, they're like, you know, urgent problem, you help me right now, they're going to kind of jump up without question. And they've probably, you know, fought off weird things in their time, even as young people. Like, I bet weird stuff happened growing up with Aang, so yeah. So at the end, you know, Kai tries to, you know, help and ends up, you know, getting injured, and then, you know, other people are kind of taken captive, and so at the end we're kind of left with, you know, who's safe, who's dead, like, who's captured, like, what's going on, like, a bit of a cliffhanger about what's going to happen next and who's actually survived. So, I mean, obviously Caitlin knows what happens, but yeah, Brittany, anything that you're super concerned about or you know, predictions?
All I'm envisioning is that it's going to be Kaya and Bumi saving the day, because they're kind of on that cliff, and I feel like what's her name with the laser for a head doesn't really know, like, okay, her, she doesn't know whether they lived or died, and I think she's just going to be focused on getting out of there. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to be the two who are left, who didn't have an air bison and who didn't, you know, get captured, because I feel like Tenzin, he got captured, he was looking pretty rough. And Kai, maybe he'll help too, I don't know, but I feel like it's going to be the Kaya and Bumi show, and I hope I'm not disappointed.
It took three of them to take down Tenzin. Like, that was,
I know,
so badass.
He's so cool.
Yeah. He's dreamy. sorry. He's just so,
I
mean, good.
I can't get J.K. Simmons out of my head when I look at him, so he's not
that's
that dreamy.
True. No, that's true. Yeah, that's unfortunate.
After I saw that, like, airbrushed picture of, like, J.K. Simmons with, like, the tattoos on his head, I was like, oh, I can't do this.
Yeah, but he's just so cool. So, all right, favorite scenes, we've already discussed at length most of these. Mine was Zuko's face when Korra says that she talked to Iroh, yes, that was an emotional moment for me. Would anyone like to extend further on their favorite scenes here? Brittany, yours was obviously
Bolin meets being Zuko, because yeah, it's basically me, like, watching myself on TV. Yeah. So.
And Caitlin?
Mine was Korra talking to Iroh in the spirit world, and Iroh getting to talk about Zuko and Aang and being BFFs. And I loved his face when he was like, they started off a little rocky. That's an understatement. Oh,
I loved him so much. So, yeah, mine was also, my favorite quote going on to that was also related to this Zuko-Aang-Korra situation, which
oh,
was,
my God.
What?
I just read all of what you wrote.
Which was that girl, the Avatar, Korra. Korra coming up to Zuko and, you know, saying, it's definitely related to Caitlin's quote, you know, it's this entire scene of them interacting. But, you know, her just saying to him, you knew Aang better than anyone. And then I've put the commentary, better than Katara knew Aang? Hmm? And then I've put Zutang OTP ahem. Because, I just like it.
I don't. I feel like they're just, like, you know, friends. And then Zutara forever.
All right.
I just feel like Zutara are friends. And yeah. Zuko and Mai forever.
Yeah. Anyway, another point, just about that, was that Katara, like, where's Katara? And if Korra needs advice about Aang, or, like, what Aang's life was like, or how he made choices, where's Katara?
Well, listen, she doesn't have, like, a badass dragon that she could just take away from the Northern Water Tribe and, like, or
if
Southern.
If Zuko loved her that much, he'd go and get her on the dragon. And
he just left her and was like, listen, you're safer here. I'll be back when I can. And that's why he hasn't, like, it's not like he's hanging out in the Fire Nation because he's like, oh, I should probably go check on my daughter. Because he's been, like, shacking up with Katara the whole time.
Oh, God. Anyway, aside from that ridiculousness, I actually really loved the "as long as I'm breathing, it's not over" quote, because he is Tenzin, so, yeah. Anyway, carrying on from that, Brittany, what was your quote?
You know, it doesn't even need to be said, but it's, oh my gosh, it's Lord Zuko. I can't believe it.
Yeah. And Caitlin?
And mine was related to Natalie's when Korra asks Zuko for advice, and he says, I was off in Aang's council, and I'd love to be yours.
His face, like, lights up. It's like, so... Caitlin, can we show them the fan art now?
Oh, yeah.
Have
it
we shown them...
It was done after season one.
Did we show... Did we link it?
I don't think so.
Okay. We've got some very important fan art to show the newbies involving this Zuko. Which you may have come across in your travels, but I saw it, like, years ago and, like, burst into tears. And
I don't know
it's
if
most,
I've seen it. I feel like you talked about
it's
it
most
when
relevant
we were doing
to
Avatar.
This episode. It's most relevant to this conversation. So we'll find it for you, and then you'll die, and it'll be
I found
great.
It.
Okay, so it's Zuko. I'll paint a picture for you. Mm-hmm. It's Zuko, and he says, so how's firebending training? And Korra's like, good, though I didn't expect Iroh to be such a tough tutor. And then she's like, how was the West? And he says, colder than I remember. These old bones just aren't how they used to be. And then they're just sitting there, and they're drinking their tea, and she just sits there and says, I missed this. And then Zuko says, me too. And it's Aang sitting there, not really Korra, because it's her past self chilling with Aang, which doesn't make any sense after this episode because she can't connect to her past selves.
This was drawn like literally like in maybe even before Legend of Korra started airing. Like this was drawn like as soon as Legend of Korra was like announced, so we didn't know that she wasn't going to be able to like...
Oh, well then that, they did a really good job of getting Zuko pretty spot on.
Yeah. If you know what I mean. Like it was drawn like I think this
yeah,
came out
yeah,
like
yeah.
way before way before the actual thing of her cutting off. So it was the idea of Aang being able to possess Korra's body, basically, which he
I think it was done after season one because it talks about Iroh being her fire master.
Yeah.
So it was sort of an assumption.
Oh no,
that
yeah,
that
it says General Iroh too, who has been said will be her fire. Just to clarify, I think it might have even been before the whole show started airing, but yeah, no official old co, as in old Zuko designs. That's just something I whipped up based on Sozin, Iroh the First, and Roku. So yeah, they've done a pretty good job of like what old Fire Nation men look like. Anyway, I love this, and when I first saw it, it was definitely before Aang got banned.
Oh
from
yeah,
Korra's
yeah, yeah.
body.
So it says that he's talking about General Iroh,
yeah.
not Iroh.
Yeah, it's It was, anyway, it was done early on without a lot of canon, but I loved it, and it was...
it's very cute.
It made
and
me
they're...
very emotional, and it's most irrelevant to this conversation of them talking about Aang, and so everyone should see it now. Anyway, alright, so we've finished all of the main part of this episode. We've got a little bit of feedback here. If you'd like to... get in touch with us in order to, have some feedback for another episode or any comments or questions about what we've discussed this week. If anyone wants to, as I said, work out the itemized list of whether Korra's done more good than harm or any other questions that you have for the show or you'd like us to answer or, you know, theories, you can contact us rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Our Twitter, re_watchable. This post on hyperball.com, you can leave a comment, or you can join us on Tumblr, which is rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. You can also leave us an iTunes review, which helps the podcast look super legit. If you rate us 5 stars, then you can borrow my Mexican grandma, that's Ariana's Mexican grandma, for fashion advice. She has excellent style. So I'm pretty sure that would be a good deal for anyone. Couple of bits of feedback. We've got one from Kimberly Hainer, Kimber Power on Twitter, saying, here's a BuzzFeed quiz for which Atla character you are. I got Zuko, which is kind of accurate. Did anyone else take this? I have not taken it yet.
I did.
But I'm going to take it right now really, really quickly. And the title of the quiz is My Cabbages. Caitlin, did you take this?
I did, and I got Zuko, which wasn't even remotely accurate.
And I got Zuko, which is accurate. So maybe just everyone gets Zuko.
Maybe.
Well, while you take that, I'll
read the... Yeah, do you want to read the next one?
So we got a message on Tumblr from Gleefully Fantastic 101, who says, "Guys, loving the podcast so much. I'm so loving season 3 ones, especially. I hope the newbies are enjoying season 3. I can't wait for the rest. This is definitely one of my favorite podcasts. Thank you guys for all the time you put in. Love from one of your biggest fans." And then I sent back a boomy gif, because that's what I do when you write to us on the Tumblr. Unless you write this thing called fan mail, which I don't know how it works.
Don't do fan mail. Do a proper
neither
ask.
Does Ariana, because I can't send you a GIF. I couldn't send Ariana a GIF. But luckily, she's the only one who wrote us fan mail.
I think the fan mail is, I think a Tumblr ask has a limited amount of characters, and I think fan mail has more, or it just doesn't come to the same place, but it's not the ideal,
Well, it was submission. Just Diana who did it, so it's fine. Oh. Everyone else is actually okay.
I got Zuko, too. maybe just everyone.
I suppose it's rigged.
There's just what they know everyone loves Zuko, and there's only one answer. All right, fair enough.
Hi, Zuko here.
Okay, so we'll finish up now, and yeah, we'll be back next week with the last two episodes of season book three. Brittany, any big predictions for the proper finale of season 3?
I'll make this prediction not knowing what the state of the show was, because I feel like that would change my answer, meaning like whether it was going to come back just online or they knew that already. So without knowing anything about what was actually going on with the show at this point, I'm going to say that this whole thing is not going to be resolved in book 3, and that we're still going to have our fearsome foursome as a threat for the future, because I really like them and I don't want them to go away, and I certainly don't want another book of spirits. So I'm hoping that they kind of stick around, or we get a big bad who's just as good. And I think that Kaya and Bumi, like I said earlier, are going to be the game changers for the finale.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. Do you want a hint or a clue in any possible way?
No. I think I'm good.
Okay. Good. Just checking. All right. No problem. All right. Well, we'll see you guys next week with a team of people, I suppose. Whoever ends up making it next week. I'm not sure who that group is going to be. And yeah, enjoy until then, and we'll see you later. So, I am Natalie.
I'm Brittany.
And I'm Caitlin.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
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 Bye. Bye.